coming up on The Blueprint. First, we're going to hear from Mike Lake, MP. He's going to talk about the Canadian Autism Partnership. Then we're going to hear from Gord Brown, MP, who's going to talk about how we can better support thalidomide victims. And I'm going to talk to you about the latest outrage when it comes to Chinese foreign investments in Canada and how it threatens national security.
You're listening to The Blueprint, Canada's conservative podcast.
Well, they thought they were going to have an easy day over there today, but not so fast, Mr. Speaker.
What is it going to take for the Prime Minister to have any respect for any laws in this country that may curb his out-of-control behavior?
And now, here's your host, Tony Clement.
And welcome to The Blueprint, Canada's official conservative podcast. It's great to be your host, Tony Clement, Member of Parliament for Parry Sound Muskoka, where we talk about the current issues that are before Parliament, some of the debates that we're having, some of the contentious issues that Canadians care about. And I'm very happy to have with me Mike Lake. He's the Conservative member for Edmonton.
Wetaskiwin.
Wetaskiwin. Okay, that one's new. Is that a new name?
That's a new riding. Well, Blaine was the member of parliament for Wetaskiwin before, but this is a new riding, Edmonton Wetaskiwin.
Well, Edmonton Wetaskiwin voters, I apologize in advance, but we've got a great MP in Mike Lake, and he's doing a lot of work on a lot of issues, of course. But one that we want to talk about today is the Canadian Autism Partnership. Tell us a little bit about that and a little bit about how you came to be involved in this important issue.
Well, first of all, my son Jaden has autism. He's 21 years old now. He's been fortunate to grow up in Alberta, where services have been pretty strong for people with autism, particularly kids with autism. But not everybody in the country has the same opportunity. And so not that long after I was elected, realized that there was a sort of a platform that I had. That wasn't what got me into politics in the first place, but that there was a platform that I had as a parent of a child with autism, and that there were a lot of Canadians in the same boat who didn't have access to the same services that that Jaden had. And so we worked for many years to try and bring the autism community together to come up with ideas. Some of those years you were the health minister.
I remember.
And you remember some of the conversations that we had at the time, and took some steps forward but we really took a big step forward in 2015. So after doing some pretty cool things, stepping stones along the way, in 2015, we started a Canadian Autism Partnership working group. 12 experts from across the country to put forward a plan for a Canadian Autism Partnership.
So these are experts in the autism research community and, I guess, representatives of parents and so on and that kind of thing?
Parents, stakeholders who would run organizations. We've got some fantastic organizations, plus four top researchers, world-class researchers who work in Canada, who are part of this partnership working group.
And so they came up with a plan of action, basically.
They did, and submitted a business plan in the fall of 2016, and a budget ask for $19 million of the government of the day. And interestingly, the Liberal members of Parliament, over half of their caucus, signed support letters for the Canadian Autism Partnership. They wanted to see it happen at the time. Even the minister herself, I think, eventually asked for it in the budget.
And, tell us a little bit about what that $19 million would go to. Like, what's the end goal that you want to see reached with that $19 million?
We want to see, you know, really, because most of the challenges are provincial in nature, you got to respect jurisdiction. So what this does is it's a partnership of the organizations across the country. So it's not a new organization or another competing organization. Really, it's meant to be a partnership of all of the organizations working together, speaking with one voice, advising governments in their jurisdiction on things like early intervention or education or housing or vocation, or, you know, what happens when mom and dad die? What happens to people with autism then? Because this is a big concern for families living with someone with autism. And this sort of expert partnership working to provide the best evidence base possible, scouring the planet for the best practices in all of these areas and advising governments so Canadian governments, policymakers can make the best decisions they possibly can.
So that's it. Like, there's a lot of different things going on in different jurisdictions. Some of it very, very progressive and innovative when it comes to autism in terms of incorporating autism people into our society and making sure that they have the right resources available to them? Is that what we're trying to do?
Absolutely. And you know, autism is a challenge that faces people across a lifespan. And of course, it's a spectrum. So people at different places in the spectrum have different challenges. And we have to be careful that we make sure that we address those challenges. But, you know, commonality that you would have is difficulty in social interactions and understanding, understanding the abstract, I guess, in a sense. So something like a job interview for someone with autism, even at the higher IQ end, is very, very difficult. You might have someone that can get a degree in engineering because they're really good at the math, but that social interaction that helps them to get a job is something that's very, very difficult for them. At that part of the spectrum, you deal with significant mental health issues as well. So you, because people are just a little bit different, they might get bullied mercilessly.
Right.
And but also because that social interaction is tough for them, they'd have a very difficult time dealing with that and understanding how to deal with it. So you're getting bullied, but you don't know what to do about it, right? We see in the employment market, 85% of people with autism are not employed. And that's a challenge because there's incredible skills and abilities that if we can tap into those skills and abilities in terms of structure and order and those types of things, a lot of things that other people don't even want to do, people with autism love to do those things. And so Jaden, in his case, he loves to work in the library. He loves to sort things and sort books, or, you know, he loves doing laundry and sorting things and taking it to where it belongs, or emptying the dishwasher, things like that. Those are things that, you know, he'll cry when his shift in the library is done because he wants to keep working.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So tell us then where we're at, this autism partnership idea, I know it came to the floor of the House of Commons. So set up that story about why it was important that it do so and what happened then.
For sure. Well, it didn't get funded in the budget, first of all. So that was the first thing that happened. And it was interesting because I think that we took for granted that this was such a no-brainer that it would have all party support and would be something that the government would find room for. It was only $3.8 million in a budget that's something like $25 or $26 billion in deficit. So seemed like a no-brainer. So there's some surprise in the autism community, and I think, in the opposition parties that it didn't wind up in the budget. So we moved an opposition day motion. Now, oftentimes those opposition day motions are really centered around the political issues of the day.
So this is a motion that you moved on behalf of the Conservative Caucus. That's what an opposition
exactly,
day motion
right,
is.
Exactly, right, right. So we get to choose a certain number of days, a small number of days that we get to choose the subject that gets discussed and then voted on in the House of Commons. And so we were very intentional about making this motion non-political. We didn't criticize the government in any way. All we did was say, here's what autism is and lay out some facts about autism, and here's what the Canadian Autism Partnership is. Do you support it or not? Of course, motions are non-binding, but once a parliament decides that it's a good idea, that's a huge step to moving forward. And we debated it on May 18th. We voted on it on May 30th. And I had done a lot of work talking to Liberal members of Parliament to get them on side. And many, many, many of them had expressed that they were on side with it, in favor of it. In the end, I think that for whatever reason, the Liberals whipped their vote. And only one Liberal member of Parliament voted in favor of it. Every other one voted against it. Every Conservative, New Democrat, Elizabeth May from the Green Party, all of the national parties unanimously supported it.
But it was a pretty shocking moment in the House of Commons, I got to say.
That, it was.
When all of a sudden these people who had gone to the photo ops, who had signed put their signature on to support this autism partnership, then turned around and voted against it.
Well, the month earlier is April's World Autism Awareness Month, and World Autism Awareness Day is at the beginning of April, and there's always an Autism on the Hill event, and we had over a dozen Liberal MPs show up for the photo op. A few of them stayed for some speeches, and then every single one of them voted against the Canadian Autism Partnership, which is, you know, supported by the vast, vast, vast majority of Canada's autism community, and of course, many, many other people.
So tell us a little bit. I know there's been an incredible reaction to that from across the country. So tell us a little bit about the reaction to that vote, and then tell our listeners how they can become involved themselves in the wake of that vote.
Yeah, well, you know, we've been consistently posting on social media. My handle on Facebook and Twitter is Mike Lake MP, Instagram as well. But, posted the photo, for example, of the MPs all standing there with the banner on World Autism Awareness Day. And I think we're up to 1,600 shares right now on that. On Twitter, almost 600 retweets of that. And if you read the comments, so many Canadians who are, they're frustrated by the position, but also really encouraging in terms of continuing the battle here. So what we're encouraging people to do is to take to social media, particularly social media. Twitter is a great place because, you know, most MPs check their Twitter accounts. And so tweet at your member of parliament, your closest Liberal members of parliament in your region, and let them know how you feel about this. Make sure that you email them and call them as well. We live in a democracy, Tony, and if people speak up, I think that governments can change their minds.
Well, let's hope that they do. Mike Lake, thank you for doing all that you're doing on this very important file. It shows the compassion that you have as an individual and something that we as Conservative MPs share with you. So thank you for doing it, and let's hope that we can make some progress on this issue in the very near future.
That's great to have the conversation. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you. Coming up next on The Blueprint, Gord Brown, MP for Leeds Grenville, talks about thalidomide cases and what we can do better.
You're listening to The Blueprint, Canada's Conservative podcast. Browse all of our episodes at podcast.conservative.ca. And now, back to The Blueprint and your host, Tony Clement.
And welcome back to The Blueprint, Canada's Conservative official podcast. I'm your host, Tony Clement, here, and we have another segment for you. A great guest to have on our show, Gord Brown, the Conservative Party's whip, the MP for Leeds Grenville. Gord, welcome to the program.
Glad to be with you.
It's glad to have you on, because we're going to talk a little bit about thalidomide victims. It's incredible that this issue is still rolling around out there after decades and decades. But maybe give the audience a little bit of a background on thalidomide, what occurred many years ago, and why this issue is still an issue.
This was a drug that was given to women for morning sickness sometime in the period between 1959 and 1961. So there were about 10,000 children born worldwide at the time who were born with deformities. Many of these children did not survive childbirth. Some of them were born with no legs, no arms, and other important organs. Today, there are a number of them that are still survivors. And over the years, there's been a number of compensation packages in Canada. First of all, with the Brian Mulroney government in 1991, and again with the Stephen Harper Conservative government in 2015. And there was a number of people who were not able to meet the criteria. The criteria included providing a prescription that the doctor would have prescribed this drug to the mother, but in addition to that, there was sample drugs given out by doctors. So there's no record of those.
I see.
Many of these doctors now, 55 years later, have passed away. Those records have not been maintained. So the ability for those victims today to actually access those records is just not possible.
So there was an evidentiary threshold to get some of the compensation money from the government of Canada, but it was very difficult to meet that test for some of the victims who genuinely were victims in this case.
Well, it's clear, and one of my constituents came forward with this to me a year ago or so, and he had been denied. The company that the government, the program that went then Health Minister Ron Ambrose brought forward, a company called Crawford Victim Services, was to carry out the dispensation of this support for these victims. But because some of them were unable to provide that documentation, they were excluded. So we estimate that there's about 25 to 30 or so of these still forgotten survivors of thalidomide. So I've been fighting for these people for about a year now, and I've met regularly with them. I've asked multiple questions in the House of the minister. And back in the fall, we took over the meeting when the minister was there on another topic, brought forward a motion, and basically shamed the Liberal-dominated Health Committee into doing a study. So about a month ago, they did the study. They sought witnesses from the UK, witnesses who were victims.
Because this was a worldwide phenomenon. UK yes. had a number of thalidomide victims as well.
Throughout the Western world. Right. There was about 10,000 babies born deformed in that period of time in the early 60s. So there's still many of these victims still worldwide, but in Canada, most of them have been compensated except for this small group There's been a number of programs. W5 has done a program. I've asked multiple questions in the House. And then we got to the committee. And the all-party health committee has written a letter to the Minister of Health, encouraging her to loosen up the restrictions and allow these people to at least have an in-person interview. They were not right. given the opportunity to have that. And as well, there's now genetic testing. In the UK, they've used this. The UK model allowed for an in-person interview and to ensure that the people who otherwise would not get compensated get the compensation that
so they this deserve. Is kind of like that you're just saying let's use the best practices around the world in this particular case. The UK had an interview, the UK had some genetic testing that was helpful in this regard, and we should just sort of modernize that so that we're not missing anyone.
That's right.
And because we're trying to the compensation is there for everyone who was affected by
this. There's still money in the fund.
Yeah.
There's people who have lived a complete life of pain, suffering and discrimination. They've not been able to, in many cases, been able to work or do sports or in terms of employment, they can't carry out a lot of tasks. So they were excluded from a lot of opportunities.
Right.
These people have paid a big price and they're all getting older. And many of them who are still with us today are suffering from serious health complications, internal organs, as well as the visible physical deformities that they have today. So we're asking the government to do the right thing. Even the Liberal members of the committee supported the letter that went to the minister asking for her to go back, let these victims actually have the in-person interview and do the right thing for these people. I've been fighting for them, and I'm really hoping that the government will do the right thing, but they sure are in no hurry to do it.
I'm speaking with Gord Brown, a member of parliament for Leeds-Grenville, who's been leading the fight on proper compensation for the forgotten victims of thalidomide. Thanks, Gord, for being on the show. So the committee's done its report. The report has been filed with the government. What's the status of things?
Well, the letter was just sent to the minister in the last week or so. And so the minister now, at question period, has indicated that she will go back and look at that. It's time for the government to do the right thing. And if it had not been for some of my colleagues in the Conservative Party bringing this forward, as well as myself and working closely with our vice chair and critic of the Health Committee, both Colin Carey and Len Weber, we would not be where we are today.
Right.
So we've come a long way. The government should do the right thing, and it's an opportunity for them to show the compassion that they say that they have for people who are in need in this country.
Well, this is the thing. The money's there. The program is there. The need is there to be filled here. These forgotten victims, and we're asking for a process by which, in a compassionate way, we can finally end this sad chapter.
I believe that these people are truly victims of thalidomide, and the thing about thalidomide was it improved drug testing. There are many people today who haven't dealt with the impact of bad testing of drugs because of this.
The industry had to learn from this.
The whole drug testing regime worldwide changed after thalidomide. So these are the people that have paid the price. Governments around the world have been compensating them. It's time for the Canadian government to do the right thing. And at a minimum, give these people the in-person interview to show that they are, in fact, victims. They were excluded without even an interview. And,
right.
and the government, at a minimum, owes them that.
And you've been dealing with a particular constituent in your riding, but there are others that you know of or you've heard of, I'm sure.
There's about 25 to 30 people who were actually given denial letters from Crawford.
Right, and presumably this is across the country.
Yes, correct, yeah. from one end of the country to the other.
Well, and is there anything that the public can do, Gord, in this case?
Well, I would encourage them to get a hold of the Liberal MPs and tell them they want their health minister to do the right thing. There are a number of Liberal MPs who have become advocates. This is not, in my view, a partisan issue. This is just the right thing to do. They don't seem to want to do the right thing. Let's hope they change their mind.
Well, I think it's really important because this is a case where I think MPs can have an impact. And you have been leading the charge on this, and thank you for that. But you have been able to find allies within the Liberal government and elsewhere, NDP, who also feel very strongly about this.
Yes, and I don't think the minister is too enthused when I get up to ask a question, because she often knows it's coming her way.
But I think that it is important to show that this is not, we're not trying to make a partisan issue out of this. This is something that we're doing for the victims because we have compassion for the victims.
That's right. And there are a number of conservative members who are standing up for their constituents who are victims as well.
Well, I think that's very important. And when do you hope to have a response?
This has been dragging on now for well over a year. We've been at the committee. We've asked multiple questions in the House. There's been programs on television such as W5 with Kevin Newman who have done programs on this. The minister has promised to get a response to the committee. Let's hope it's a positive one.
Well, I think we can all hope for that. And Gord, thank you for your leadership on this file. I'm sure the victims of thalidomide really appreciate the extra time and effort you've put into this, and I know it's going to make a difference.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being on The Blueprint.
Delighted.
You're listening to The Blueprint, Canada's conservative podcast. Browse all of our episodes at podcast.conservative.ca. And now, back to The Blueprint, and your host, Tony Clement.
You're listening to The Blueprint, Canada's official conservative podcast. I am Tony Clement, your host, Member of Parliament for Parry-Salmuskoka. I want to talk a little bit about the curious case of a Chinese investment supported by the Chinese government into a Canadian company called Norsat Technologies in British Columbia. This has been occupying a lot of time in the House of Commons because what the Liberals did when they approved this deal going forward is that they did not do a proper and full national security review. Here's the background. Usually when there is a foreign takeover bid, a takeover bid by a foreign company, particularly one that has strong ties to state-owned enterprises or a government, that bid is reviewed on national security grounds when the target company, the Canadian company, is involved in Canadian military or is involved in information technology that will perhaps deal with national security issues and privacy issues for Canadians. In this case, Norsat is a technology company, a satellite company that has a number of Department of Defense contracts with the United States, does a lot of contracting with the Department of National Defense here in Canada, and so forth. So the usual process would be that you would review that through a full national security review. The Liberal government did an analysis of the situation and told the target company, the Canadian company, that no national security review was necessary. As soon as this got out into the media, we started asking questions, and the Liberals are denying what they in fact have done. They're denying that they did not do a review when they haven't done a review. They're denying that they told the company that no review was necessary when in fact we have the memo from the target company to their investors or potential investors that no review is necessary. So the first issue is the Liberals are trying to talk out of both sides of their mouth at the same time. The second issue, which I think is probably the more important issue, is there should be a genuine and full national security review when you have an investing company from the People's Republic of China that is obviously supported by the Chinese government. This company also has been picking up companies all over the world, this Chinese company, including in the UK. When they sought to invest in a UK company, the British government in that situation did something that they've only done several times in the last 15 years. They did a full national security review on the situation, and they appended 5 pages of conditions before the deal could go through to protect the national security of the UK, to make sure that there was no transfer of very important technology, military technology or IT technology, to Chinese interests or Chinese state-owned enterprises. That's how the UK handled it. In the contrast, the Canadian government isn't even going through that process at all, is not having the review, is not attaching any conditions. This has been an outrage in the House of Commons. And just recently, the U.S. Congressional Committee is now coming on board saying that they have concerns because this target company that is being taken over by the Chinese state-owned interests is also involved in the Department of National Defense in Washington, D.C. So that's the situation that we face in the House of Commons. It is something that we are going to continue to raise and continue to object to. This story is not going away. Reporters are continuing to find new information about how this company is involved in our national security needs, how the investing company, the company that wants to take over, has been involved in numerous situations where they have pilfered information technology and have been caught at it, and so is not considered a good actor when it comes to protection of information technology. And so, listeners, we're going to keep asking these questions because it is very important. I was at a committee, the National Security Committee, very recently. We had before us the acting director of the Canadian Security and Intelligence Service, CSIS, and I asked him, you know, how are these decisions made? When is it, what sort of evidence is used to decide not to do a national security review? His answer was very telling. He said, look, all we do is provide the evidence. It's the government that makes the decision. It's the cabinet that makes the decision. So when the minister responsible, Navdeep Bains, stands up in the House of Commons, says without batting an eye that he is merely taking the direction from the experts, and yet the experts are the ones saying, hey, don't look at us. This was a cabinet decision. You know something is afoot. You know something is up. And that's the situation we face in the House of Commons day in, day out on this particular issue. So yes, we are going to continue to ask questions. We think it's important that the national security interests of our country, Canada, are the ones that should be paramount. We should not be having a situation where the interests of the Chinese government, and by the way, this has nothing to do with the people of China, and has everything to do with the government of the People's Republic of China, the communist government of China. We should not have a situation where their interests and their desires in some way overpower our national security interests. That is the issue before the House of Commons. That is the issue that is being played out in Canadian media. And we will continue to ensure that our voice is heard and that we continue to demand that we have a full national security review in this context. So stay tuned. This issue is not going to go away. I suspect there'll be some more revelations in the future as well. It looks like the target company, NORSAT, may have another suitor, an American suitor. So it'll be interesting to see how the government responds to that. But I've also heard through the media discussions that I've had that the Hytera, which is the Chinese company, has very deep pockets, probably buttressed by Chinese government support. And I suspect that we'll hear from them as well, because they are on an acquisition binge that can only be related to Chinese security and national interests. So stay tuned as we continue to ask the right questions and protect Canadian interests, including Canadian national security interests. This is Tony Clement signing off from The Blueprint, Conservative Canada's official podcast.
Thank you for listening to The Blueprint, Canada's Conservative podcast. To find more episodes, interviews, and in-depth discussions of politics in Canada, search for The Blueprint on iTunes or visit podcast.conservative.ca.